Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Kenny, Mike Lewin, and Dave Martinez sprinting through the next 55 minutes, digging around the world of the NFL, fantasy news, fantasy football, and big news. Some people got paid yesterday, Dane. Paid big time. So we're talking a little bit about that. I don't think it has much of a fantasy impact, but we like to bring in the fantasy news, the NFL news. We're going to talk player props, coaching props. We'll get into a little bit of DFS maybe if we have some time. So we'll do that. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. On the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, on TuneIn Radio, on iHeartRadio, on a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. Thank you. Thanks for listening. So the big news yesterday, and in the last 24 hours, is Odell Beckham getting paid. $65 million guaranteed, 95 over 5. He's a Giant to 2023. This is the way I suspected it would play out. It looked a little dicey at points, but this is how good organizations work. They do not panic. They just get back to the negotiating table when the dust settles. They come away with one of the most dynamic playmakers in the entire league, and this is his future, right? We've seen other guys like Dez Bryant who have gotten paid and have gotten frustrated and have dipped in skill a little bit, and they find themselves on the scrap heap, so to speak. And Dez still isn't on a team, but the Giants knew what they had. He is going to have to forge his path with Eli Manning and whatever Dave Gettleman decides to do at quarterback in the next 2-3 years. And here we go. Odell is the man. He's going to suck up a ton of targets this year.
Yeah, he absolutely is. You know, Odell is going to get his. He's, by all accounts, a top three receiver in the NFL, and he deserves it. You know, entering, I believe, his age, like 25 season, you know. Everyone else got paid. Landry got paid. Mike Evans got paid. Sammy Watkins got paid. All the other guys from that draft. Odell has had the best, you know, start to his career of all of them. I believe it is deserved. I think the interesting part here, and this is what I look at when I see contracts, Mike, is you look at that, not the 5 for $95. You look at the guaranteed money, right? And so he's guaranteed $65 million over the last, you know, over the next 5 years. So he's in good shape. Here's the thing I want to ask you, though, about this contract. And I mentioned it on Fantasy Freestyle a long time ago. Mike, he's also getting paid something like $25 million a year from Nike. You know what I mean? To keep up his brand, you know,
To be fair, it's 25 over 5. He gets 5
okay,
a year
my bad.
Fair enough.
But that, listen, what and what's he getting from the Giants? You know, 5 from 9 for 95, that's what, like 15, 16 a year? So, I mean, 19. Who is he more beholden to? Who is he more beholden to, the football Giants or when, you know, Nike wants him to keep that image, keep that blonde hair, keep on getting down on one knee with the kicking net?
I think it's all one and the same. And if Odell was started to take political stances, he would have to deal with the corporate entities, whether it's the NFL, whether it's the Giants, whether it's Nike. Nike is obviously a company that is far more comfortable with people expressing themselves than is the NFL and the Giants. We're not going to go down long road of anthem talk today, but I think it's a fair question. When Dane is bringing it up, I think it's a fair question. I think he's done the right things here. Now, we did see a video last week where he was, like, witness to an assault, didn't do anything about it. But, again, he wasn't part of it. He was just there. I've said on other shows, like, and maybe it was even this show last week, like, I just don't be out in the club all the time. He's a celebrity, and I get it. And if I were his age and I was a celebrity and I had the money and all that kind of stuff, I don't know that I would do any different. But I'm not. And I'm in my 40s, and I got kids, and I'm just telling, like, let's just not be out every opportunity we have to be out. So we'll see how that plays out long term, but I think it's a good thing. And I do think that Odell has done some knucklehead stuff, but to my earlier point, it hasn't been that egregious. He hasn't been a party to any criminal acts. It's just knucklehead stuff on the field and off, and I think some of that is immaturity, and who am I to say that I didn't make a bunch of stupid mistakes when I was his age? Is he 25 yet? How old is
something like that, and you didn't have social media around then when that was happening either,
no
right?
No kidding. Like, I barely use social media now. I use it to promote the show. I barely use it now. I just don't, every time I say something on social media, I don't feel like getting hammered for it. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's fun to spark discussion, but I'm not as big a user of social media as other people in our industry, for example. So Odell is 25. He'll be 26 in November. So young guy, I think he's figuring it out. I think it's a good organization for him to be in. I think other organizations aren't as buttoned up as the Giants are, which goes to my earlier point. They just got it done, and Odell's going to be a top three fantasy wide receiver this year in my mind. And, you know, we'll see how the – excuse me. How good the offense is as a whole. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the one thing with that, and you know, I'm kind of just clarifying what I was saying before, like in terms of like the corporate sponsors and stuff like that. So here's the one case I'll give you. Remember a few years back, RG3, who was sponsored by Adidas, he was coming back from the ACL injury, and they had this whole ad campaign, right? Like all in for week one, ready for week one, whatever the case was, whatever the slogan was, you know, and then he rushed back because of the ad campaign, and he wasn't really fully ready. That's what I mean, like an example of ways how the sponsor can also apply some unneeded pressure that maybe the team doesn't want. So I just wanted to get that in because I saw that you were, you know, you were choking on something over there, Mike, early on in the morning on your breakfast. Well, look, so I wanted to help you out. That was the situation I was thinking about.
Yeah, I got a little dusty down here in the studio. But so no, I think it's important to bring it up, but now the money is big coming from the Giants, and I don't think there's any question where his loyalty should lie. Doesn't mean that he's not also loyal to Nike. Look, you know, LeBron gets tons of money from multiple organizations, and I think he's acquitted himself nicely as far as a public image is concerned. Whether or not you agree with his political leanings isn't the point. It's just that he's respectful about it, and I think he stands up for what he feels is the right thing. So another guy that got paid, and it's not something we talk about all that much, is Shaquille Mason. Shaq Mason gets a 5-year, $50 million deal from the New England Patriots, solidifying his spot at right guard for a long time to come. Now, they did lose left tackle Nate Solder in the offseason. He's with the Giants now, and this has been a unit over the last couple of years that has had some turnover, and they've had some concern about how bad it might be. It's why when they lost to Denver in the AFC Championship game a couple of years back and Tom Brady got beat up, they brought back Dante Scarnecchia out of retirement, their offensive line coach, to fix what ailed them. And now they feel like they have a player that they can count on. So I bring this up simply because, and it's going to lead me into our next point and the next player, it is a sign that they have some belief in their offensive line now, at least one of the players.
Yeah, and I think this is really important. We've talked about it. I think we mentioned it yesterday, Mike, that this is the blueprint for how to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, right, is get pressure on him. We talked about this, how the Giants did it, you know, in the last decade with the NASCAR package. We've seen what the, you know, Philadelphia Eagles have done when they beat New England in terms of the rotations they have on the D-line. You have to get pressure in Tom Brady's face. If he has time to sit back there, he will pick out a receiver and, you know, and deliver the ball accurately. That is what their offense is based on. You have to get pressure on this. I think the Patriots know that as their potential Achilles heel. We talked about how the offensive line can undermine teams. We spent some time on that yesterday, Mike, talking about Dallas and Minnesota potentially. So I think the Pats are smart enough to know that, and they're shoring this up. An important move for New England, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, they drafted a left tackle in the they drafted Isaiah Wynn
before they drafted Sony Michel in the first round. He tore his Achilles. He's out for the year. They were going to start him as a rookie at left tackle. Instead, they are starting Trent Brown, who they expected to start at left guard. He now slots in at left tackle. They made a trade for him earlier this year with San Francisco. Yet another underrated little New England-San Francisco connection. We talk about it in terms of Jimmy G, but this is another example of players switching teams there. The relationship going back to Bill Belichick, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, and so on. So if you're reaching out to us today, please do so on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, and Dane is at Spittin' Speed. So before we get back to the player news, get your season ticket to Fantasy Glory now with the 2018 Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. It's not just a draft kit. It's a full season package that takes you from draft day to championship week, and it features in-depth analysis from some of your favorite fantasy sports radio experts. So go to rotoexperts.com, use code WINNER, W-I-N-N-E-R, to get 10% off on the Exclusive Edge package and set aside a spot on the mantle for that 2018 championship trophy. If you're going to give us a call today, please do so in about 25 minutes or so. We start opening the phones in that last segment at 8:40. So if you have draft questions, fantasy questions, give us a call now, but you'll be on hold for a little bit. Again, that number is 844-843-6879, 84-FNTSY. Last thing on contracts. The news with Khalil Mack is that there's no news. John Gruden just kind of stated the obvious yesterday and said that there hasn't been any contact. I do find it completely curious that John Gruden has been the head coach effectively since January, and yet he's never spoken to Khalil Mack. I don't know what the solution is there. The Rams at least have commented and said we're really working on it. I detailed here on this program, I think last week, they have very little cap room. With the Rams, and I think that's what's making the Aaron Donald thing difficult. Somebody would argue with me, well, yeah, well, then why did they give Brandon Cooks and Ndamukong Suh money, and why did they pay this guy a whole bunch of money? It's a great question. I don't know. I think they know they're keeping Aaron Donald, and they're trying to structure the deal to backload it as much as they can, but that will still be hard to do if they give him an upfront guarantee, which is going to be higher than what Odell Beckham got yesterday. So put it at $75 million. Say it's over 5 years. You give that's just the guarantees. You prorate that to $15 million. They have less than $2 million in cap room. So I don't know how they can structure it in order to fit it under the cap. That's why I can't tell you right now. I'm not a salary cap expert. I think I know a lot about it, but I'm not the type of guy that could figure out how to fit that in.
And, Mike, they got Goff coming up in a year or two also, right? They extended Gurley. You know, they bring on the Sue contract. They're giving extensions to offensive linemen left and right, you know, with Donald, as you mentioned. But they're kind of all in, I think, right now. You know, they see their window as really the next year or two. We've seen what happened in Seattle when they had to pay Russell Wilson. I expect
but
similar
he's part of the right now,
Los Angeles. That's what I'm saying. He is. But what I'm saying is the window is right now, because once they pay Goff, they're going to feel the crunch, and they're going to have to get rid of some of this defensive talent that they've taken on. I think their window is 2 years until they have to pay Goff, because then this kind of fantasy defense that they're putting together and the extensions to offensive linemen and Gurley and the wide receivers that they paid, even Cooks, like, it's not going to be sustainable. So what I'm saying is they got 2 years until they got to pay Goff, and then they're really going to start to feel the walls are going to close in.
Yeah, this is Goff's third year, he'll have his – this is his third year. They have him for next year. Then they can option him for a fifth year. So really
– okay, so three, not two.
But there will be a bump in that fifth year. So it isn't – it. Yes, it's still a favorable contract in that fifth year, but it will bump. So it's not quite as comfortable as it will be for 18 and 19. 2020 would see a bump in his pay. You're seeing Bortles kind of go through that right now with he's in his fifth year option year, and then they spread out the money a little bit to guarantee him a little bit more up front, but they make it easier on themselves, the Jaguars did, to get out of Blake Bortles after this season if they want. They'd still owe him about $7 or $8 million, but if Bortles goes in the tank this year, they can get out of it for far less expensive than if they had just extended him long term, which would have obviously cost in the neighborhood of $100 million, which they don't want to do right now or ever for Blake Bortles. So so there you go on, you know, the Khalil Mack thing. I don't know what to tell you. I think the Raiders have a team that I think they're a very ordinary looking team. They are starting Colton Miller. John Gruden is starting the rookie at left tackle, moving former left tackle Donald Penn over to right tackle. So you have to consider that when you're talking about Derek Carr and Marshawn Lynch. You know, obviously offensive line is a big part of that. We talk about it more on this show probably than more than some other shows, but clearly that's going to be something to keep an eye on, a rookie left tackle on a most offensive line. So I wanted to make the transition off of the Shaq Mason thing over to a guy that came back finally. We had two guys return to practice, maybe a couple of more, but two that really jumped out at me, two guys that returned to practice yesterday, Mike Evans and Sony Michel. Talking about Sony Michel, who you and I grabbed in our draft just a couple of days ago in the Carton and Friends draft, or I think this is what we're calling the league, the Carton and Friends draft. So Sony Michel back in practice. We've seen Rex Burkhead banged up. Sony Michel has an injury history, both at Georgia and, you know, concerns coming into the league with a knee issue. But if he's returning to practice, I feel a lot better about him playing in week one.
Yeah, absolutely. They, you know, there were early reports, even inside injuries here with us, that this may linger into the first couple of weeks of the season. But the fact that he's back at practice gives me a lot of encouragement, Mike, for our team in that fantasy league. Because remember, as you mentioned, Burkhead dealing with a they said a slight tear in his knee that he's going to play through. I think this gives, you know, Sony Michel more of a chance to, you know, be maybe the lead part of that timeshare. Mike, do you think there's any chance that, I mean, because they invested a first-round pick in this guy, right? Do you think that there's a universe where they actually end the idea of this crazy whack-a-mole committee in New England that they've been doing? I anticipate, called it a bold prediction, but I can see the Patriots doing something very similar to what the New Orleans Saints did over last year. You know, taking some of the weight off of Drew Brees as he's in his 40s now, relying a little bit more on the running game, especially to help the defense as well. Do you think New England could do that with their dearth of options, especially with Edelman not there, them investing in the running back position, maybe to help Tom Brady as he enters his age 41 season? There's been reports that he's a little bit banged up as well. I think there's a chance that a healthy Sony Michel is more than just part of an RBBC. I think he could be the lead back, since the likes of which they haven't had since Corey Dillon.
I'll say yes with a but. I think the answer longer term could be yes. I don't see it happening now or even necessarily through this season. I think they do like the options that Burkhead and James White provide them. So they've always been pretty good at being versatile and changing the options and changing looks offensively. So I think the answer is yes with a but, meaning by next season, maybe they are making that transition. Maybe they go out and get another running back, one who's healthier than Rex Burkhead, to pair up with Sony Michel. Sony Michel is thought to have potentially a shorter shelf life in the NFL, the likes of which we see with Jay Ajayi, where it might be a knee issue that could create long-term problems and get and a truncated NFL career. So I think they want to use him early, even if, I wouldn't say sparingly, but they want to use him economically. So I don't see that happening, certainly not early on. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Mike Evans' return to practice and some other injuries which may be impacting the very beginning of your season. It's Mike and Dane on FST. We'll be back right after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Bona, lighting it up with some food on the way back in on Fantasy Sports Today. You know, we're talking through some injuries, and we're going to equate it to early season value for certain players. So we'll do that this segment. Before we do that, DailyRoto.com is putting more than $25,000 on the line for its subscribers this NFL season, entering paid contests on FanDuel and bringing you along for the free roll. So I have a chance to win big this year along Sports Grid CEO Jeremy Stein, one of the only men who have won two separate $1 million prizes. Each week, we'll select lucky subscribers to sweat with us and split 50% of the profits. No profits that week. Do not worry. Your name will get tossed back into the hat the following week. So head to DailyRoto.com/sweat. That's S-W-E-A-T. And learn how to get in on the action and your share of $25,000 in action. That's DailyRoto.com/sweat. So, yeah, we're talking injuries. We're going to equate that to some early season value that you might see for certain players, but I want to go rapid fire through a few of these players. So Mike Evans back in practice. Look, he's gotten paid. He's going to work with Ryan Fitzpatrick for the first three games and then Jameis after that. You and I have expressed our concern for this Tampa team as a whole. Ronald Jones, the rookie, hasn't gotten anything done. So you have two players that provide early season value for you in Ryan Fitzpatrick and Peyton Barber. But first, let me hear about your thoughts on Mike Evans.
Listen, I think the skill set of Mike Evans is great. I think he's a wide receiver one in terms of skill set. I also happen to like the fact that we think the Bucs are going to unravel a little bit in terms of game flow. He may get some garbage time targets. Here's my concern. It looks like that injury is a lower back, which seems to, you know, that hurts me for a guy that's like 6'5". I think that could linger, and that gives me concern all year. I also look at their first game. They're on the road at New Orleans, and he has something of a little bit of a history already, Mike, with Lattimore. If you remember last year, they got at it a little bit. Jameis came off the sidelines to snuff Lattimore, if you remember that, in the like eat a W yep. kind of tirade. Yes. You mentioned Barber. You mentioned Fitzpatrick. The guy I want to let people know about, to be quite honest, is Chris Godwin. Okay, there was a lot of buzz about Godwin, how he was going to leapfrog DeSean Jackson in this pecking order anyway. And then when I see that Lattimore will likely be on Evans there. I look at the number two wide receiver. And the other thing that I think about is this. All last year in practice, when Fitzpatrick was the second string guy and Godwin was the second string guy, there's a chance that they already have some chemistry that he does not have with the existing starters. I like Godwin as the name to note in Tampa Bay as at least their second wide receiver with a potential to do more if, in fact, Evans is banged up.
Right, so early season value players, we're going to jump back and forth between the injured players and equate to how you can see some early season value, and also suspended players. Obviously, Jameis is suspended. Yep. Ryan Fitzpatrick is in there for three games. Peyton Barber seems to have won the job in Tampa running the ball. Their right tackle Donovan Smith is out probably for week one, possibly a little bit further than that. So I have made major concerns about the offensive line, major concerns about the whole team. What I would say about Fitz is that we've talked about Tampa's schedule early. It's at New Orleans, Philly, Pittsburgh, really tough. But what's the option there for Fitz? Think about it. We think they're going to be 0-3 after those. But what could they also be in those games? Trailing huge, right? So maybe Fitz is your DFS play. Maybe it's a garbage time play. I know that's a lot to extract when we're talking 3 weeks away, but Tampa could be trailing significantly in all three of those games.
Yeah, I think that's possible, and therein lies, again, my Chris Godwin, right? And if they're there underneath that kind of second wide receiver, that guy who, quote-unquote, moves the chains, could be in line for a lot of second-half targets. I like Chris Godwin a lot this year. For me, he's on par with another ascending, like, second- or third-year wide receiver that has hopped the kind of veteran slight guy. I'm talking about Kenny Golladay in Detroit. I see Chris Godwin and Kenny Golladay almost on similar paths to become the number two wide receiver for their team this year. I like Godwin a lot in Tampa Bay. You make a good point about the game flow and the garbage time potential.
So we'll go back to another injured player, Cam Meredith. He has seen 48 preseason snaps. He has not caught a pass yet. The Bears, I've said this before, it does scratch my head. I do scratch my head when I see a player like Cam Meredith produce in the manner that he did for Chicago. Mm-hmm. He gets a relatively small deal, and the Bears are like, yeah, you can have him. So I think the Bears medical people are obviously very concerned about that, especially when they signed a guy coming off an ACL injury in Allen Robinson. So Allen Robinson's knee is good to go, but Cam Meredith's isn't. That does give me pause. I've avoided Cam Meredith in drafts. By the way, on the Mike Evans thing, he has slid some in drafts, but still he's looking right around that second to third round turn in your 12-team drafts. Just keep that in mind. But Cam Meredith is a guy that you can get him at crazy value. I just don't know what it means. Traquan Smith, their rookie, has been really good. They have Ted Ginn and Mark Ingram, and, well, when he comes back, they have Alvin Kamara catching passes. They obviously have Michael Thomas, who has the NFL record for receptions through two seasons. So I just don't know where Cam Meredith is going to fit into this offense. Pretty good risk for the Saints to take if he booms, but right now it's not looking like it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is curious, right, that he had the knee injury and he would have been a much cheaper option than Allen Robinson, who they bring in also coming off a knee injury. I think that's really great insight, Mike, that the team itself decided to let him go at what could have been a kind of cost-efficient option. So that does give me cause for pause. And you also just mentioned Traquan Smith. I think this is a name people need to know. We know about Michael Thomas on one side, and you know Ted Ginn is that kind of over-the-top downfield guy that we talk about. And so what's left, in my opinion, is that number two, that role, right? And I think that Traquan Smith is a name to note that could hop over Cameron Meredith and others like Austin Carr, I believe, is there. You know, this kid is a rookie. He's a 6'4" guy. He is impressed. He's been running with the twos, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is a name that you need to keep on your radar. Mike, we may even need this to build our depth in our Carton and Friends League. This is a guy with Drew Brees in that New Orleans passing game who could actually be a breakout stud from the wide receiver position. I agree with you on Cameron Meredith, and my pivot point here is Traquan Smith, a name to know.
Yeah, so Scott Engel has been all over that. You find him on Twitter at Scott E. Roto X. He's been hammering Traquan Smith as a deep sleeper. I think in your 12-team leagues, your 10-team leagues that you're drafting with your buddies, I don't think you need to draft Traquan Smith unless you want to do it in the 16th round and stash and see what happens. But I'm telling you that he's virtually free in these types of drafts, and I think you can put him on your watch list on the waiver wires and just keep an eye out for week one, week two. Are there any targets going his way? You might see an opportunity for him to break out eventually. But Ted Ginn,
do you draft him in dynasty settings, though? Do you draft him
absolutely.
In dynasty settings?
Yeah. I'm in a dynasty league, and he was drafted. So that was a 6-round rookie draft. He was drafted, so he's not out there. He was not available for waiver bids when we did them last week. I think he's absolutely a dynasty play because Ted Ginn is a year older. You don't know what Cam Meredith is. He's only on a 2-year deal. If Cam Meredith doesn't work out at all for them this year, they probably release him. Assuming, yeah, I don't think the guarantees are that crazy. I think he got like a 2-year, $15 million deal, I want to say. It really wasn't that crazy. So they might be able to get out of it quickly, and Traquan Smith will be an option along with Michael Thomas to continue to round that out. I mean, their tight end is 36 years old. Ted Ginn is a year older. They're going to have to continue to build that with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. Those are the stars of the future now, the present and the future for them. So the next guy that it looks like he's pointing towards week one is Doug Baldwin. So Doug Baldwin has really not played at all this preseason. There's been the Seahawks are notoriously fudgy when it comes to information. That's the best way I can put it, with Pete Carroll sometimes saying guy's going to be back when he's not, and sometimes saying yeah, we're going to have to wait and see when he knows he's right around the corner. But Baldwin does appear to be ready. He says he's going to be ready for week one, and you have to assume that he is the vacuum of targets in Seattle that he's always been.
Yeah, absolutely. If he's healthy, Doug Baldwin is a back-end wide receiver one. And, you know, one of the most consistent forces, especially up there in Seattle, but at the wide receiver position overall over the last 3 or 4 years. And to be quite honest, you know, I took Doug Baldwin in the GST league, blew it, and I took him in the third round. You know, I went running back, in the first two rounds in that league. And I went Doug Baldwin in the third round. And listen, if he plays, which, you know, he's trending in that direction, he's a very safe floor kind of guy. And especially, in my opinion, you know, with the loss of Jimmy Graham that year and this year in Seattle, you may see more touchdowns, you know. And I think there's going to be, I think, to be quite honest, Seattle is not going to be, as a team, as good as they've been before. And so when we talk about that game flow and that garbage time, I think there's going to be more garbage time in Seattle than there has been in the last 5 years. And that helps me with Doug Baldwin even more.
Who's second on the team in targets here this year behind Baldwin?
I guess
Brandon,
it's
Marshall,
Lockett.
Tyler Lockett, Rashad.
I guess it's Lockett. Lockett would be my guy. I think Brandon Marshall, like, will get injured at some point of the season. I think it's Lockett, unless, you know, Rashad Penny really quickly overtakes Carson, because they do see him as a three down back. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't believe in any of the tight ends. For me, it's Lockett.
Yeah, he's got 16 pounds to lose that he put on since the combine, too, so keep that in mind
right
when it comes to Rashad Penny. So, yeah, look, it's number two options in Seattle from a receiving standpoint have been difficult at times, whether it was Jermaine Kearse or Paul Richardson or even Tyler Lockett. Those have been difficult to extract a lot of value out of. They've not ever really outperformed their ADP, except in rare instances, and they've been more DFS plays, frankly, than they have been seasonal plays. So that may very well be the same. I'm not looking to target any of the number two options just because it's a little too nebulous, and I think I'm going to find it hard to extract a lot of value out of their ADPs. Next guy up, the oft-injured Jordan Reed. He's pointing towards week one as well. Jordan Reed right now, I'm going to look at where his ADP is, but first give me your thoughts on him, where you've been taking a look at him in drafts.
Listen, Jordan Reed is kind of one of those guys where I have post-traumatic stress syndrome about, yeah, you know, because I was very high on Jordan Reed early in his career. He's going as tight end 10, like you said. Here's the thing. This is the first time that at least he's been healthy, like, at the start of a season in a little while. But the guy is like Mr. Glass, you know, and I know this personally. I think I've told you this, Mike. One of my good friends was the official team photographer for the Washington football team. So I supported him a couple times, and I was on the sidelines a few times in Washington. Their team doctor is Dr. James Andrews, who's, you know, notorious. I believe he's the worst three words in sports. The words in sports you want to hear the least, in my opinion, are Dr. James Andrews. And I've literally seen, there have been times where, like, I've seen coaches be frustrated on the sideline because Jordan Reed couldn't get back in. Here's what I'll say. Jordan Reed at least is looking like he's healthy. When you got guys like Paul Richardson and Josh Dotson on the outside, we don't know kind of if they're going to take a step forward. You know, Alex Smith does like the tight end from his time with Travis Kelce. I'm looking at Reed and I'm looking at Jamison Crowder to lead Washington in catches and targets. Here's what I would say about Reed. I think he is an interesting guy in something like best ball. Right? Because if you get him and he's healthy, he'll produce, he'll score touchdowns. But somewhere where, like, a best ball format where when he goes down, the risk isn't as bad because you've already rostered one or two other tight ends anyway. I like him in those formats. And to me, you know, part of me is, if I don't get those top guys, right? And if those guys like the Grahams and the Walkers and the Rudolphs all start to go as well, and Burton goes, I am okay with taking a shot on a guy like Reed, even taking a shot on a guy like Eifert blew it, because then I see the tight end is so deep around tight end, you know, 13, 14, 15. I can pick up an Austin Seferian Jenkins, a Ricky Seals-Jones, a Vance McDonald. So because it's so deep, I'm more likely to take the risk with these injured guys.
So let me ask you this question. There's no way to there's no other way to classify Jordan Reed than to classify him as a very high risk. Because of his injury history, particularly his concussion history. If he receives another, I'm surprised, to be honest, I'm surprised on some level that he's still an NFL player. He's received multiple concussions as an NFL player, and I would think one more, and he'd have to seriously consider retirement. So my question to you, though, Dane, is what if you give him, I'll give him 15 games. Where does he finish up?
Oh, if you tell me right now Jordan Reed plays 15 games, he's a top seven tight end, in my opinion.
Top seven. I thought you were going to go even higher. I thought you might give me like a top three behind Gronk and Kelce. And I actually do think that that is the very high risk, high reward kind of guy that you can use in best ball. I have not gone anywhere near him. I think my strategy, I've said before, is relatively conservative in terms of drafting. I'm going to avoid oft-injured players. There's always going to be one guy that I'll have on a roster, probably, that I know there's some injury risk. But extremely high injury risk, like this guy, I avoid him almost every time. I don't know. I don't think I've owned Jordan Reed. And keep in mind, I do about six, or this year I'm going to do seven, which it crept up there a little bit at the end of the year. But
yeah,
usually I do about somewhere between five or six. But this year it's going to be seven. So call it about these seven teams. I've got a couple of more drafts to go. I did six last year. I probably did five the year before and six the year before. I don't think I've owned Jordan Reed on any of those teams. And that's over 20 teams now where I haven't owned him one time. Just for me, it's always been too much risk, and I'm going to fade it.
Yeah, all I'm saying, listen, I don't blame you, okay, because we have not seen this guy be healthy. My only point here, Blewett, is that the depth at the position mitigates the risk a little bit and more like gives me a better chance to take the home run swing there, because I know if I swing and miss, there's some replacement value people that I can get. It's similar to why we wait on quarterback, you know, because we know it's so deep. I think tight end is deep as well, so I'm going to take the home run. I'd be more likely to take the home run swing.
Okay, 34th wide receiver off the board is Houston wide receiver Will Fuller. It looks like he's pointing towards week one as well. Another guy that we saw injury history with. So you got about a minute to talk to me about Will Fuller. Where does he end up? If this guy's out there, you're drafting as a high wide receiver, low wide receiver three right now. You feel like he could outperform his ADP? I think he can if he's healthy. He just hasn't been, unfortunately, healthy, and then B, he drops the ball.
Yeah, and I'm not going to have many shares of Will Fuller. I'm not as high on him as others in the industry. The drops are an issue for me. Also, what we saw with him and Deshaun Watson last year, with him getting multiple touchdowns in like two or three straight games, that to me is just unsustainable. There's natural regression there. If you talk about DeAndre Hopkins being such a target monster, that leaves less for Will Fuller. He's a best ball guy to me. I'm not going to have shares of him in regular fantasy because I view him lower than most people.
Last notable injury, you say, why are you going to talk about this? But I'm going to tell you, DJ Foster was declared out for the year, got carted off the other night for Arizona. That means Chase Edmonds, the rookie out of Fordham, will be the handcuff for David Johnson. So for those of you drafting very early in the first round, you may want to pick up Chase Edmonds a little bit late for some insurance to David Johnson. So we'll come back. We'll talk a few more players regarding early season value and then do some NFL props. It's Mike and Dane on FST. Back right after this.
Are you between the ages of 13 and 22 and love fantasy football? Then GM Genius is for you. GM Genius is the only fantasy football scholarship competition giving students a chance to play fantasy football and pay for your education. GM Genius won FSTA's Rookie of the Year Award in 2017 and has already awarded over $25,000 in scholarships. Go to GMGenius.com today and turn your fantasy football love into a scholarship.
Back on FST, talking about early season value players. We got through a bunch of injured players. Delanie Walker also pointing up towards playing in week one. I think Dana and I both have Delanie Walker as a really solid, like, top seven tight end. He's a guy I always look for. In fact, I like him better than his ADP simply because I like the Titans offense this year. And if he's healthy for week one, that's good enough for me. It's not the same injury risk as somebody like a Jordan Reed or whatever it might be. Delanie Walker has a good chance to be second on this team in targets. First isn't out of the question, by the way, but I would put him probably behind Corey Davis as far as targets this season in Tennessee. So we both like Delanie Walker. He's always in that range where, like, is it a little too early to take him? And you just have to kind of figure it out from there. Dana and I did a team. We talked about it yesterday. We did a team where we picked Gronk because he was the 32nd pick overall. It isn't something I normally do, but it's been happening a lot in drafts. I think people are just worried about Gronk's injury history and what that might look like. You know, guy starts talking about retirement, people get a little iffy on it. Plus, running backs have been going super early, and people are stacking up running backs as much as they can get in drafts this year. Talking early season value, a team that really comes to mind is a team that has question marks for their starters at every level of the offense. That's the Philadelphia Eagles, the Super Bowl champs, defending Super Bowl champs. Now, Nick Foles played terribly on Thursday night, but as of right now, Doug Peterson is done with this. He's done with it. I heard his press conference quotes yesterday, and he's done with it. He doesn't want to answer the questions anymore, and if I were him, I wouldn't either. They'll clear Carson Wentz when they clear him. But right now, you have to put money on Nick Foles starting in week one. So you got the quarterback position. Now we've got Jay Ajayi with a lower body injury, which I would bet my house is his knee, which is always a chronic issue. And then we haven't seen Darren Sproles play much, but people said he's looked good in camp. We didn't get a chance to see Corey Clement the other night. I wouldn't be surprised if we're not seeing Corey Clement because they don't want to risk him because Jay Ajayi's got problems. So you got that. And then Alshon Jeffrey, we haven't seen at all. They rested Aguilar the other day as well. So give me your early season value predictions for Philly.
Yeah, so to be quite honest, the one stable guy that's left there is Zach Ertz, right? So I think he might get a little bit of an increase in share. I like Ertz early on in the season. And listen, we drafted Aguilar. We think he might soak it up. I'm interested in Mike Wallace, potentially. Look, at first, I thought he was a guy that maybe was just going to try and play the role that Torrey Smith played in that offense, you know, going deep. But I think Mike Wallace might actually have a bigger role because this Alshon Jeffrey injury does cause me concern. He's had a long history of soft tissue injuries, Alshon Jeffrey. So I'm intrigued by the potential for Mike Wallace. I'm intrigued by an uptick for Zach Ertz. And I got to tell you the other thing. I look on over to mybookie.ag. Blewett, I like the Atlanta Falcons on the road +3.5 in the season opener in Philly. I think there could be a little bit of a, not a letdown per se, but a lot of energy. They're going to raise the banner, but they might be without their starting running back, their start number one wideout, and their starting quarterback. And a lot of people have said that they think Matty Ice and the Atlanta Falcons look primed for a bounce back in the second season under Steve Sarkisian and that scheme. I actually think this number may even move a little bit more, but I like Atlanta on the road as a dog in the season opener.
The defending champs have had a really good record in these Thursday night openers. Really good.
It's true.
I think they've won like 16 of the last 17 or so. So keep that in mind. But
they could win by a field goal, though.
Yeah, it's not often that they are missing as many players as Philly is missing right now. So Dane and I took Nelson Aguilar in a draft the other day. He's going mid-8th round. So I really like that value. 41st wide receiver off the board, right behind guys like Cobb and Robbie Anderson, right in front of guys like Sterling Shepard and Jordy Nelson of that group. I really do like Aguilar and Sterling Shepard. I mean, if you're telling me Nelson Aguilar can't finish in the top 36 wide receivers, I'd say I disagree with you vehemently. I do think he has a chance for a nice season here. It doesn't mean it all has to happen in September. I think over the course of the year, you'll get good value out of Nelson Aguilar. So next guy I wanted to move over to was Jamal Williams, Green Bay Packers. Aaron Jones suspended for those first two games. Ty Montgomery dealing with a little bit of an injury issue right now, although I don't think it's ruled him out for week one. But Jamal Williams has been a guy that has been, I'd say people are gotten higher on him throughout the draft season, Dane.
Jamal Williams.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the Aaron Jones suspension is a part of it. And also, I just think that they are now seeing him more and more with Aaron Rodgers, which was never the case last year. You know, Jamal Williams kind of came in the middle of the season when Aaron Rodgers was gone already. A lot of people in the industry last year were high on Jamal Williams, even just coming out of the draft, thinking he was the long-term answer. I believe Jamal Williams is the best back in Green Bay. We've talked about Ty Montgomery in the PPR, you know, format, but I think Jamal Williams is a legitimate back-end RB2, and we've also talked about things that, like, you got to consider the team, right? And the Green Bay Packers offense in general will have production. Jamal Williams will have opportunities inside the green zone and the red zone. I like Jamal Williams. He's someone I'm trying to have some shares of. I think he's going to finish as a legitimate back-end RB2.
34th running back off the board. So according to Dane's prediction, that's great
value. Like
you're getting him right at the end of the seventh round. Aaron Jones, you can wait a little bit longer, get him towards the end of the eighth round. So there you go. Look, Mike McCarthy has shown his penchant for really switching things up, but they drafted both of these guys because they knew Ty Montgomery couldn't be an option at running back long term. So the fact that the guy gets suspended, I would imagine, can't put him in great graces with the head coach. So Jamal Williams going to have a shot early. We're just talking about extracting early season value right now. Dean likes him over the course of the year. I do too. But early season value, you have to consider Jamal Williams to be in the mix there. I know he was dealing with a little bit of a nagging injury, but to my knowledge, it isn't something that's going to keep him out for week one.
No, I think he's going to be okay. And, you know, Mike, at the same time, we talk about the game flow potential as it relates to the Tampa Bay passing game, as it relates to, I know, another team we're going to talk about very soon down there in South Florida. And the inverse is also true. We believe the Green Bay Packers are going to be solid with Aaron Rodgers under center. They're going to put up some points. They're going to be milking the clock in the fourth quarter a couple times. Who's going to be doing that? Jamal Williams. So I like him.
Yeah, so we're going to go over to the NFL props right now. We talked or teased it yesterday. So first head coach fired during the 2018-2019 regular season. Dane and I both think that Tampa could be the team that really kind of falls apart here. Money there is plus 350. So it's one of the shorter bets on the board. Hugh Jackson is the number one bet on the board, along with no coach fired. So no coach fired and Hugh Jackson are the shortest odds, as well as, and then Dirk Cutter. So first, give me your thoughts as you're taking a look at this.
Sure. Going into this, I agree with you. Dirk Cutter is someone that I want to target. I'm looking for the teams where it's going to completely unravel, right? And so for me, Dirk Cutter and Tampa, I think they're realizing that Jameis is not the guy to lead them. And if you remember, Dirk Cutter got this job because it was Jameis who went to the wall for him, saying that they wanted to keep the offensive scheme in place. I think they are set for a reset. The other team that I also think it's going to kind of go off the rails is down in Miami. Okay, and down in Miami, I think it's a similar situation where Gaze is tied to the hip with Tannehill, and I think that this we know how this story ends. So I think Miami and Gaze is an option, and I think that Cutter and Tampa is an option. I like that value for Gaze in Miami. It can go bad real quick down there. So those would be my two guys. Although the other name I would throw out there, and it seems a little crazy, especially because they've showed a little bit better in the preseason. I was thinking about Baltimore. You know, this idea is just like, has the message gotten stale out there in Baltimore? He's been there for a long time. Ozzie Newsome is moving on as the GM. We all thought going into this preseason that Joe Flacco was on his last legs, you know? So that idea that maybe they need a whole regime change down there in Baltimore just because the message has gotten stale, if they do bad, that's just another name to put out there that will probably have a much bigger price out there as Harbaugh. But I like Cutter and Gaze.
Yeah, I think it's plus 1900 on Harbaugh. I think I would not be obviously you can get a huge payout, but I would not be on that because I think there's enough veterans there. Ozzie Newsome is still there through the end of the season. I don't think it's so much about the message getting stale as I think they're just going back to the drawing board with a lot of the same veteran players, and I don't necessarily know that that's a positive.
Exactly. At some point there, they're going to have to kind of hit the reset button. And I really did think that Ozzie Newsome was trying to almost prime that with his last draft, you know, give a new coach the idea of what do they do with Lamar Jackson. You know, they're all kind of tied to the hip, I believe, Flacco and Harbaugh. I would have said the same thing about Marvin Lewis and Andy Dalton, to be quite honest, but they look great in the preseason as well.
So let's do a couple of team over-unders here. Because we haven't done this one. At least I haven't done this one yet. The Green Bay Packers are at 10 on the nose right now. There's not a lot of juice either way. It's leaning. They're both negative money, according to mybookie.ag. So let's go there. Packers. Number is 10.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. That's a lot of wins, although I believe in Aaron Rodgers. I believe in some of the changes they've made on defense as well. I like the Packers. but 10 is a lot.
Do you like
lot.
The Packers or Minnesota to win that division?
So I have evolved on this. This Minnesota offensive line is really concerning to me, Mike. If you asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said like Minnesota over Green Bay, but they both make the playoffs, right? And now I kind of think it might be Green Bay over Minnesota, and they both make the playoffs. I could see Green Bay at 10 or 11 and Minnesota at 10. This is really tough for me. I think I might get better value with Green Bay to win that division better than the over.
You got a tough.
So if I wanted to bet Green Bay, I'd bet them to win the division.
They're coming out of their bye week, and they go to the – that's week seven. They go to the Rams, to New England, host Miami, to Seattle, to Minnesota. So coming out of the bye week, four or five games on the road, three are very tough opponents. One is a notoriously difficult place to win in Seattle. So
finish off
I think
well,
it's going to be right
– Arizona, yeah, Atlanta, at the Jets, yeah. Not bad there.
Yeah, at New York and then hosting Detroit. So I think Vegas, because of the way that the juice is laying out here, I think Vegas knows that they're right on the number, and it's going to be a difficult one. Mm-hmm. That could be a stay away, as you said. We'll do a couple of more team props tomorrow. We will make sure that we keep going through some of this early season value stuff. But hopefully you got some good information today. We'll be primed and ready tomorrow to give you even more information, talking some more player props. We'll do a DFS stacking strategy, see if that's a good strategy or a bad strategy. So it's Mike and Dane. We're out, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.